Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck, and welcome to Electrosoft's Thought Leadership Podcast Series. This is our first in a series of programs. We're going to focus on insights on technology programs and discussions on public sector's cybersecurity and IT modernization efforts. And joining us for this inaugural podcast is Sarbari Gupta. She is Electrosoft's president, and Kumail Kass. He is Electrosoft's senior engineer. They're both going to be sharing their insights on cybersecurity and security operations centers and give us perspectives on the changing cybersecurity threat in landscape, as well as workforce challenges, all sorts of really good stuff. Welcome to both of you. And first off, Sarbari, let me have you start off by talking a little bit about Electrosoft. Tell us a little bit about what your company does, how it came about. Give us sort of the elevator pitch, just so for people who don't know anything about you guys.
Sure, Chris. So Electrosoft, so what we do is we help federal government customers to secure their computers and their data and protect it from the bad guys. And so we do this through our cybersecurity services and our identity management services, but we also help them to develop software solutions as well as look after government IT infrastructures, you know, to make sure that they're working and available. So that's kind of what we do in a nutshell. We got started in 2001, about 19 years ago, to serve federal government in this important sector. And given that most of our customers are indeed in the DC area, we are conveniently located in Reston, just outside the metro area. And so that's kind of where we are.
There you go. And how did you get, I know this sounds kind of an odd question, but there aren't a ton of women in IT, in cyber. How'd you get into this?
Well, it was kind of accidental. So I grew up in India, and that's where I did my undergraduate in electrical engineering. So then I came to the U.S. to do graduate school in telecommunications. That was the hot thing back then. This was the late 80s I'm talking about. But then in graduate school, I started taking a couple of courses in encryption and cryptography and operating system security, and I just got hooked. I thought, wow, this is just so amazing, such an interesting arena. Yeah. And, you know, it was a good choice because when I made the choice, it was the late 80s and, you know, the internet wasn't what it is today, or the World Wide Web wasn't what it is today. And so over the last few decades, it's only gotten more and more important, you know, as an area to work in. So I'm really glad that I chose an area that turned out to be really interesting.
You chose well. Nice job. Kumail, give me a little bit of your background. How'd you get into being a cyber guy?
Yeah, so not as impressive as Sarbari. I was still walking around in diapers in the 90s at that time. But for me, it's pretty easy and commonly what happens to a lot of guys that I know and my friends that are in the field. We started getting into IT just building computers in high school. I wanted to get into gaming, and that turned into a little bit of a business for me because somebody came over to my house and they saw lights in my computer and said, they said, this is cool. And I said, yeah, do you want to buy it? And I remember I made my first $300 or $400 off of that. And then just from there, started getting into computers. I learned if you took your A+, you could make some money. And then from there, I started taking certifications. At that time, back in like 2008, 2009, security was a keyword. And I did not even know what that meant, right? There was no concept of real cybersecurity at that time. But I knew that this is where the industry is going. This is the key word. This is what I need to do to advance my career. So I took my Security Plus for the first time, and that's when I really got interested. Like, okay, this is a little bit more than what I understood or what I thought of this genre to be. And yeah, I started kind of getting my feet wet from there.
And anyone who's a parent out there, rest easy to knowing that all that gaming can turn into something real, though everyone will sleep better at night. Sarbari, before we move on into the real stuff, there are a lot of cybersecurity companies out there right now. And even in the government space, there's a lot. What makes you guys different than other folks out there? Why, what makes you guys unique? I know you're an 8A too, right?
Well, we're good. Maybe that's the first reason, but no, seriously. I think several things differentiate us from, you know, our competition. Number one is our, you know, sustained focus on cybersecurity in the federal government arena for 19 years. I mean, not many companies can say that, you know. So definitely we've seen the evolution of what cyber means in the federal space, you know, over the last two decades. But number two probably is, you know, our thought leadership. I mean, there are a lot of companies offering services in cybersecurity, but we, from the get-go, from, you know, the very beginning, we've taken time out of our busy days on our own nickel to do all kinds of cybersecurity, like thought leadership activities, such as conference presentations, writing articles and blogs. They're doing various kinds of things to show off to the world that, you know, we are not just a player, we are a leader. And also, I guess, the work that we do for NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, that's kind of solidified our thought leadership position as well, because we are co-authors on a number of NIST standards and technical guidelines. And why that's impactful is NIST writes the standards, but the rest of the government have to follow those standards. Right. So we have broad impact, you know, through the work we do for NIST. Then I guess number three, what we realized over the past few years is that, you know, given that we've been around for such a long time, we've developed very mature management and delivery processes and practices in our company. And while that's not specifically for cybersecurity, but that's what paves the path to successful outcomes in any contract or project. And so if you hire us, you know, we'll get it done. I guess that's what we can promise.
Yeah. Let me ask you to give me a little bit of, because you guys see things from so many different perspectives. Give us a little bit of your sense of the cybersecurity landscape right now. And I'm going to ask you to start particularly, we're living in these unprecedented times, right? How many times have we heard people say it? But with COVID, I keep hearing things, people saying, like, people are hacking in unique ways and coming at folks. Have you seen anything unusual around that? Has that changed the threat landscape that you see out there?
Well, let me try to address your earlier question first. You know, how have we seen the landscape to evolve over the years? And we've been doing this for a long time, right? So back in the good old days, you know, all the computers and data were in protected data centers. And so the challenge for cybersecurity was really to protect the perimeter. But, you know, over the years, what's happened is the IT infrastructure component, you know, the actual servers and databases, et cetera, they've moved to the cloud, as well as applications and services have also migrated to the cloud, you know, for most organizations. So now the attack surface is much larger than it used to be back then. And so it requires different types of techniques and tools, you know, to keep those broader attack surfaces secure. But also, I guess, over the years, as we all know, we love our mobile devices, right? So every organization, they're just, you know, people in leadership positions, as well as every level, they're moving to using mobile platforms. And so that presents a new set of challenges in terms of, you know, securing the applications on the mobile device, or something as basic as doing strong authentication, meaning proving who you are from a mobile device, is different than proving who you are from a workstation or a laptop because of, you know, certain attributes, I guess, that the latter have. But all of these things have made it more and more complex, I would say, you know, through the years as we've migrated to cybersecurity. And also, I guess, you know, the other big thing happening that I've been noticing over the years is the sort of controlling of operational technology through IT, meaning, let's say, critical infrastructures, you know, such as electricity or water. They're not just operational, you know, they're not just physical infrastructures, they're controlled by IT. And so these days, the bad guys, if they want to attack your critical infrastructure, they do it through the cyber avenue. So that's another thing that, you know, has kind of definitely complicated the cyber protection needed by different organizations.
And really accentuated the weakest link kind of approach. They just go after whatever the weakest link is, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the mantra in security. But coming back to the COVID arena, I guess, you know, we are in a, it's a combination of, you know, people feeling anxious and vulnerable, and as well as people working from home where their guards are probably lower than it would have been if they were in the normal work environment, right? And so people are very sort of vulnerable, or they're apt to fall for phishing attacks, you know, which are telling them, oh, do this for COVID or find out this information, or maybe, you know, for companies, there's a CARES Act and PPP loan. And so lots and lots of emails coming in saying that do this and do that. And so people are just more vulnerable. And so they fall for these attacks that they might not have normally fallen for. And as a result, they might be infecting their computer systems with malware, which can then, you know, help the attacker to launch a bigger attack on the broader infrastructure of the company. And or they might lose money on their own personal money.
And I think that's such a really good and interesting point that I hadn't heard other people talk about is when you're in your home, you just feel different than when you're in an office. I mean, I always hear people joke about, you know, hey, they're not even wearing pants or maybe wearing their pajamas or something. It's a different kind of mindset that you have. And so you may bring that to how you think about the cybersecurity practices that you may have. And they're just as, if not more so important when you're working away from the office as they are when you're working from home. Kamel, I want to get you to talk about a little bit. Give us your sense as a cyber landscape. What are you seeing out there?
So, like you said, Corona is on the tip of everybody's tongues. It's crazy.
We're sick of it, aren't we?
Yeah, literally and figuratively, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy. You're absolutely right on that last point. You're sitting at home and you're a little bit more comfortable in what you do. So when you're in a business setting, business environment, you're a little bit more vigilant. You're kind of looking around. You know, it's a little bit of a different structure. I'll just give you an example of some of the stuff that I'm seeing on a personal level. My dad is a business owner. He got a letter in the mail yesterday with a card, right? Credit card and a whole bunch of stuff. He applied for a PPP loan, all that stuff, right? They're saying, hey, we got your money. You need to call this number and provide us your bank account details so we can give you your money. And he showed it to me, said, hey, what does this look like? And I'm like, hey, it's good.
Red flags going off everywhere.
Right. And it's not coming from our bank. So this is some of the stuff that, you know, is happening. And it's sad, but it's true. People are going after donation pages, donation accounts. People have hacked the coronavirus map. I don't know if you guys saw that a little while ago. That was pretty bad. They were dishing out malware just from websites. Phishing attempts are crazy off of Corona and COVID right now. So you do have to be vigilant of any emails that you get, any websites that you kind of land on. I usually, the second I get something, I'm first actually looking at the email address itself to make sure it's coming from, I don't know, target.com or bankofamerica.com versus bankof-america.com or something like that, right? They're very good at doing things like that. Something that's very common today, following up on what Sarbari said earlier, is, you know, we're using our phones a lot every single day. One of the things that I, even being as a security professional dealing with this every day, you get in the routine of things, you kind of forget to you know, keep an eye out for this stuff when stuff is common. I got an email from one of my bosses. It says, call me at this number, et cetera, et cetera. When you look at your phone, it doesn't give you all the full details of the email, right? It just says his name. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. That's a different phone number than he usually has. And then I opened the email. Before I opened the email, I called him and I was like, hey, I got an email from you saying to call at a different number. Is this legit? Is this valid? And he's like, I didn't send you any emails. I was like, whoa, this is interesting. So go back and look at it. And, you know, so that's some of that stuff does get targeted, right? So, yeah, it's things like that. This is on the tip of everybody's tongue. We have to be aware. We have to be vigilant. We got to take care of this. As the scope of innovation increases, IT increases, the threat vectors increases for us, right? So we have to understand how to deal with these things.
And Sarbari, one of the challenges it always feels like for cybersecurity and for cybersecurity companies, like, I mean, we all have to admit that, you know, sometimes you're doing something and, you know, oh, it's a password. Sometimes it feels like cybersecurity gets in the way of me being able to do my job, rather than being something that enables you to do your job, right? If cybersecurity doesn't work right, then you're not able to do your work. And that's a careful, you have to constantly message that. Part of that is getting people to get why this is important, isn't it?
Well, you know, in this day and age, I don't know, I think the message is maybe clear, because if you can't get through the authentication step, for example, if you can't prove who you are either through your password or a smart card or whatever, you can't even get access to the server. So more than ever, I mean, it's an enabler just in the fact that since everything is remote now, it's nothing is almost on your, you know, actual laptop or your desktop. So you have to go out there to get some sort of service or data. And to do that, you have to authenticate to some server. And if you can't do that, you're out of luck, right? So to me, it's almost like it's the ticket to doing anything online these days, you know. Parts of cybersecurity, of course. So.
I want to talk a little bit about, and we're going to start off high level and then dive in, but SOCs, their security operations centers. But I think there are some people who hear this terminology and don't always like, okay, I'm going to pretend like I know what SOCs are. So tell people what SOCs are and why they're important. Why do they matter?
So yeah, it's kind of funny. The SOC acronym is definitely overused in the IT world.
Right.
There's SOCs, S-O-X. There's another SOC means system on a chip. There's SOC reporting. And then we come to SOC, the Security Operations Center, right? So it's really like mind-blowing when you kind of think of all these different acronyms. What we're talking about today here is Security Operations Center. This is the compilation of essentially a focus group of security teams, infrastructures, guidelines, procedures within an organization that are focused at securing your organization, right? Essentially, that's what it is. It's the cyber guys. It's that security team that's securing your environment.
And is this the place where people come together? So when you hear cybersecurity center, you kind of think of, okay, this is a place where information sharing takes place, where you can kind of get you get dashboards as to what's going on. Is it that kind of thing that it offers?
Yeah, so people come together in the sense, usually security people come together, right? So yeah. Within security, there's a lot of different smaller niches that you can go into. So there's the incident response guys, right? There's the compliance guys, there's a management team. So these guys are all working with teams outside of the security realm to gather data, manage that data, make sure procedures and guidelines are being met. Those guys kind of come together here. And yeah, absolutely. We have dashboards running showing, hey, what are some of the most common traffic that's going outside to a different country or a different service? What are the most used applications within our environment? Things like that. What are some of the highest level of threats that we're seeing on our network? Things like that. We'll have those kind of displayed for our own internal use to be able to kind of gauge what's happening within our environment.
In the end, and either one of you can answer this, but in the end, connect a cybersecurity operations center to the stuff we were talking about at the beginning, because I think that's sometimes some of the disconnect that happens. Cybersecurity people are working in kind of their little space, and the frontline workers are working in their space, and sometimes there's not that connect. Connect the SOC with people doing their jobs, people trying to end the threat landscape and all the kinds of things you're at. How do those two things connect with one another? Sarbine?
So one example would be, so let's say if you fall for a phishing attack and you get a piece of malware on your computer, and that computer is connected via virtual private network to the rest of your company's infrastructure. So let's say that piece of malware starts, you know, shipping out lots of data from your company's network to an outside server, let's say. And so the person sitting at the laptop with the malware, they might just notice the laptop is running maybe a little slower than normal, but they may not realize what's going on underneath their nose. Whereas, you know, somebody in a SOC, let's say a cyber person watching the dashboard or the, you know, types of activities on the network, they may realize that, oh, there's huge volumes of data going out through this IP address. And so that might trigger some, you know, reaction on their side, thinking that, okay, what's happening? Let's investigate it and figure out what's going on. So maybe that's one example.
And you guys have had experience with a number of organizations working on the Security Operations Center. Talk a little bit about what you see. What do organizations do that's right? And what do they do that maybe they, you know, things they've done and you go, okay, let's not do that again.
So yeah, I've been in security operations centers from small businesses to bigger enterprise level to government agencies. And I can tell you two key things that are the biggest pitfalls, and if they do it right, they're the biggest advantages for a security operations center. It's number one is communication, not just within your own team, but outside your team, because you have to work with people to be able to get data, right? There's absolutely different stakeholders and asset owners that are sitting across your organization, and to be able to get the data and get them to do the right thing. So communication is very high on that list. The second thing I'll say is visibility. Along with that communication, you need to be able to understand what your environment actually looks like. Mm-hmm. And if you're receiving all the data, the logs to kind of come in into your security operations, whatever tool that you're using to analyze that information and be able to work on that. So for me, those biggest two things, those are like your Achilles heel. If you have the right communication within your organization and you can actually see what's happening within your organization, you're on the right track, right?
Sabari, did you want to add anything on that?
No, I think that's
okay.
Good.
Great. And particularly in government, does government have unique challenges that are different from the private sector?
I believe so. It's a little bit more red tape usually. I think that's a pretty common thing that we know of.
And the procurement system, just getting the equipment you need, bringing outside folks to come in and work can be more challenging, I think.
Exactly, right? So not just from acquiring physical systems, but to acquiring services, anything, procedures, guidelines, a change can take, 3 to 6 months versus right. 3 days, because changing a word needs to go through the right process. That's not necessarily a negative thing, because you need to vet the things that need to go into these places. Like, for example, if you're changing a line in the NIST guideline, that's very important. You shouldn't be able to do that within like a 30-minute session, right?
Right.
You need to go over and do the right vetting system, the change management system. So that's just part of being in the government. Absolutely. Everything works just a little bit slower than you know.
More pieces. They're large organizations, right? Yeah, they're very
absolutely.
Large organizations. So
I
hear a lot of words like threat intelligence and a lot of talk about automation. How does that work? Is this kind of buzzwords, or is this real? Does this actually help folks? I'm not sure which one of you want to take that.
Yeah, so threat intelligence and automation, definitely buzzwords, but definitely a real thing that's happening today. Threat intel, has been very important, not just in cyber, but in all landscapes of, you can talk about warfare or whatever, competitor looking at each other. But for us as IT professionals in security, there is so much information that we need to ingest on a daily basis. There's so many new attack vectors, threat vectors that are coming out, that if I just sat there and started looking all that stuff up by myself, that's all I would do for 24 hours, and it would be the next day, and I wouldn't get any sleep, right?
Yeah.
So that's why we have communities that are dedicated to doing this, right? That threat intelligence piece. They're going out and studying this. Hey, how are bad guys moving? What do they most commonly use? What are some of the systems that they use, right? So that's been key for us for years. We've been looking at those, and we'll take those reports and say, okay, this report applies to us in our organization because we're using, Adobe or something like that, PDF reader, right? So we need to focus on this within our environment. This threat intelligence report applies to us. Oh, this one is based on some other application that we don't even have in our environment. We don't need to, this isn't on the highest priority list, right? What we're seeing now is the second part of that, which you mentioned, is automation. A lot of the things that we do as cyber professionals can be processes that can be repeated, right? So we have our standard operating procedures, and we're doing essentially the same trends of thoughts of when we're responding to these events or these intelligence reports. So now we can start automating this. Okay, we got these lists, they have these indicators within that list saying these are definitely bad. Okay, we can go ahead and already say that if you get this list that's prioritized as orange or red threat level, right, go ahead and automatically block this, automatically notify other people, or do some type of analysis with it, run it in your sandbox environment, something like that. So a lot of that automation is being built around common processes and procedures that we're already doing in the security world, but being able to do that quickly and be able to do it faster so we can respond to the incident faster, make sure, hey, is this a real threat or is this a false positive? What do we need to do? What are the next steps?
Yeah. And with automation, you can do that in a much more efficient way, right? It's able to say, okay, these are not the things. Instead of having somebody go through and look at all the things that don't matter, you get to spend actual human time on the things that do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. And the other aspect of automation is it drives down costs. You know, humans are expensive. They're unpredictable. They have bad days and good days, you know.
I know. So, tell me about it.
Whereas, you know, machine or automated systems, you know, usually they're consistent and they do what they've been programmed to do.
Yeah. And it's you make sure you get all those programmed correctly. But once you do, it's just like it's really, really helpful. I want to talk a little bit because we were talking a little bit earlier about these five function areas that you see. And so I'm going to just read them real quickly. And then I want you to go. I want to go through each of them because they seem important to me. The five areas are threat detection, analysis and forensics, security architecture and special projects, endpoint protection, compliance and vulnerability management, and data loss protection. Let's start with threat detection, analysis, and forensics. I think we were touching on that a little bit with automation and intelligence, but maybe you want to talk a little bit about why is threat detection, analysis, and forensics, why does this matter and why is this important?
Yeah, so this is the core thing that within most SOCs that you need to really be aware of, right? What kind of threats are coming in? And if a threat is coming in, being able to detect that in a timely manner and respond to it, that is absolutely key. A lot of the times we'll see threats that come into an environment. We saw something happen. Maybe we took the right action to remediate it. Maybe we quarantined the machine. Maybe we got it off the network. Well, we don't necessarily know what all of the things that threat might have done. That's when the forensics piece comes into play. We'll take that machine offline and we'll put it in a sandbox environment, something that's isolated from our regular corporate network, and kind of see, hey, what else did this bad guy do? What was he really trying to get after? Was it just a common phishing threat, or was it something a little bit more targeted? So that's that threat action and threat detection and forensics piece. Security architecture. This is getting your security within your organization or your security operations center going from just having security as a mindset to becoming a mature SOC, right? Becoming a mature security operations center. This is not necessarily the easiest thing to accomplish because as you're bringing up a server in your environment, if you're not thinking of security, if you're not thinking of that architecture of, hey, I need to be able to put this web server behind my security appliances, behind my security stack, or now as we moved a lot of our infrastructure to the cloud, how do I get my web server behind this cloud infrastructure so we're passing all that traffic through there and there's no gaps within our environment, right? That's that architecture piece. Then we can move into endpoint protection. This is another big threat vector, right? This is all your guys sitting with your laptops, going onto websites that they're not supposed to go into, clicking on links that they're not going to. As they say, you know, the best computer system that we have for our users is the one that the users can't log into. Right? That's a joke, right? If you can't get into the system, hopefully you can't break it. Hopefully you can't get hacked. But being able to have applications, tools, technologies on your endpoints, like simple things like antivirus, right? Going into a little bit more complicated things like application whitelisting. We have different technologies now like intrusion detection and prevention systems, being able to look into your host, into your users' computers and machines and say, hey, is this machine okay? Do we need to take a look at this? Is it doing something nefarious? What are we looking at? Then we have the compliance side. This is making sure that you're, as a government agency, you're required to follow some compliance measures, right? So NIST guidelines is one of them. If you're a private organization and you're handling credit cards or something like that, you have to be PCII compliant, right? So there's different compliance measures that are regulated sometimes, and sometimes we'll go above and beyond those compliance measures to go to at a higher extent to say, hey, our machines, our servers, our environment is compliant with at least this minimum thing. Sometimes if you're not and you do get breached and you have a hack, you may receive a very nasty letter from any number of three-letter agencies saying, hey, you're responsible for this. So it's important for that compliance piece to be up to date to make sure that everything we have on our network is actually compliant, right? And then lastly, that brings us to the data loss prevention, the DLP piece. This is pretty key. This is very major. A lot of people kind of get comfortable, especially in today's days when you're working kind of remotely, when you're working from home. You start mulling the line between works, what's work computer and what's personal computer. So we'll see a lot of people kind of email their W-2s or their health information out of their regular corporate laptops, right? And that's a big deal. Anything that reaches our environment, right? Anything that's sent out of our environment as an organization, it is our responsibility to protect that. If we allow that to get into the hands of bad guys, well, that's on us, right? We didn't do what we needed to do to protect our users. DLP can go a little bit past that too. We can say, let's say we're a software company or something like that, and we have our golden master code that we, an application that we made for. We can say, hey, is somebody trying to steal this from us within the company? Did they like email this out or did they put this on a flash drive or something like that? Right. We can kind of have those fingerprinting for that data to say, hey, where is this in our environment? Did it go out of our environment? If it did, why? How did it happen? What's the deal? So those are like four or five very key pieces that bring like a roundabout way of what security operations does on a day-to-day basis.
And you mentioned in there the data loss part of it, because that seems like a really important a key part, because in the sense, if you've lost something, sometimes I've heard situations where people don't even know that the data isn't accurate, and then you could be making decisions based on data that isn't accurate. That feels like a really critical part of this, isn't it?
Absolutely. Again, it goes back to a lot of what we were saying, right? Especially nowadays when we're kind of mulling the line between what's work, what's professional. We're in a little bit more relaxed state of what we're looking at when we're looking at the glass, right? When we're looking at our computers. So that's absolutely true. That can happen. And data loss prevention can be that one thing that can stop that, right? Hey, is this what this is supposed to be? Is this supposed to go out? Is this allowed to go out? So we can take a look at that stuff.
Yeah. It's so complex. Savari, did you want to add anything to that? I mean, those areas feel so important. And sometimes, I mean, from a leadership perspective, as president of an organization, I just have to imagine that sometimes you go through lists like that and you're talking to clients about lists like that, and they can get lost in the acronyms, in the words, and you're constantly having to connect them to why this matters. Why is this important?
Don't you? Right. No, absolutely. That's so true. But I did want to add that, you know, while the C in SOC is center, but really modern SOCs are not about a facility where people sit around watching dashboards. You know, it's really, and especially with many of the security tools being able to be implemented in the cloud or they're native to the cloud, it is, a SOC is it's a concept, you know, it's a bunch of skilled cyber folks watching those dashboards from wherever they are. And that's really important in this current situation we're in. So for example, for some of our SOC work for federal government, you know, it's our folks are our cyber sort of experts such as Kumail, they're not necessarily sitting at a facility at the government site. They're sitting in their own homes, and they're absolutely able to, you know, effectively do their job because of the way we've distributed the tools and cloud environments. So that's also nice to know that, you know, it's not about being physically present in one little control tower or center to be able to secure the network and the data.
We mentioned this earlier, and we've mentioned the word cloud a couple times. How does cloud change the work that goes on in SOCs and just generally the work that you guys are doing overall, Kumail?
Yeah, so just like security was a hot buzzword, about 10 years ago, cloud is now definitely the hot buzzword. Cloud plus security is definitely the hot buzzword. It makes sense, right? We used to have everything within our little castle and that moat system, right? The firewall within our organization, within our physical buildings.
At your server under the desk, you knew where it was. You could trust it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Cables lying around your desk, tripping everywhere. Right. exactly that. And then organizations started saying, "Hey, we can kind of offload this responsibility, this cost to somebody else who's already doing this, right? So why not do that?" And people started going to that. And now as more applications in general are moving to the cloud, you have to transition your security infrastructure and your mindset to that way, right? So it just makes sense. The government is getting there, right? They're moving slowly but surely to the cloud. Private organizations, they made a fast run towards cloud the first second they saw it. They said, "Hey, we need to save this money or spend this money to help protect us in the long run," right? So that's definitely a key thing. And what's cool in the cybersecurity realm, we're seeing that a lot of the applications that we used to have, so our antivirus or our IDS/IPS, which is your intrusion detection system, prevention systems, things like this that we used to have to go buy a server for, put it in our server room, install XYZ things, right? Get it up to date and manage all that stuff. We can kind of offload that now to a third-party vendor or whatever that application is that we're using. And we don't have to deal with it on a day-to-day basis. We're not worrying about the updates. We're not worrying about this. The threat intelligence report that thing is ingesting every day, we don't have to do all that because we've moved that into the cloud as well. Now we can point a lot of our traffic that's already sitting in the cloud infrastructure, let's say AWS or Azure or something like that, and it'll already pass through these third-party vendors that are sitting there. And then we can essentially say, okay, within the cloud, this is where our cloud sits, and this is where our security stack is within the cloud, and it's all being done properly, right?
But I think it's important for folks to remember that you're not outsourcing security, right? You still have a security. It's kind of like the cloud folks are doing the basic level of security, but you still have to do stuff above and beyond that. There's still an important role for the individual organization. You don't get to outsource security. I think a lot of people would love to do that, but you don't get to, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. For private organizations, sometimes there are ways that you can outsource security, honestly. That is a new trend that we're seeing as well, which means usually for mid-sized organizations or companies or smaller organizations, if you're running a two-man shop or a 10-man shop, you may not have X amount of money to spend on security guys, and as Savari said. So if those guys don't have that, they can buy services from different companies and vendors nowadays and say, "Hey, we'll use X amount of hours from you to provide us some security services." They'll kind of look at your environment holistically and say, "Hey, you're a restaurant. This is some of your biggest threat vectors. Okay, you're a software development company. This is some of your biggest threat vectors. This is what you need to be aware of," right? So things like that. That is a big trend nowadays as well.
As we mentioned, this is the first in a series that we're going to do of these discussions. So I think I'm going to break there, but we've talked about a lot of stuff. So I'm going to ask both of you to kind of, if you have to leave people with one thing that you really hope they take away from our time together, what do you hope they really go home with? What do you hope kind of gets implanted in the brain? Kumail?
I just say stay vigilant. You know, it's very easy to become, a little bit relaxed, look at security as a back burner type thing. It's very easy to do that. I think having those two things that I said earlier, having communication in place and visibility in place within your security organization centers, right, operation centers, this is very key. If you can get this up and running, you'll be very successful in your cybersecurity protocols, your guidelines, in your security posture, right? But the second piece of that, I'll say, if I was to leave anybody with anything, train your users. you mentioned something as security being a hindrance to a lot of organizations back in the day. I'd argue that that's changing now. Back in the day when I got into security, we were the bad guys. Hey, you guys are always blocking all the cool websites that we want to go to, and you're blocking YouTube and Netflix, and I can't send emails out. That was the case back in the day. But as commonly and recently, we're seeing so many attacks that are happening on the news, right? Every single day, our neighbors are getting something like that. My dad is getting these letters that are phishing attempts or whatever they are, right? As these things kind of occur more commonly, we're seeing the users, even within organizations, saying, hey, this is a little bit annoying, but it's okay for me to do the extra step, right? So users are a lot more receptive to these things. So train them, right? Show them what a phishing thing looks like. Hey, this is legit, this is not legit. So if you can tell your users, that is your biggest and weakest link, in my opinion. And if you can control that, why not? It'll be fantastic.
It's always that balance, that risk. You're always doing that risk assessment and trying to figure out, okay, what can we do that makes it all work, right?
Right.
Yeah. Sabari, wrap it all up in a nice big bow for us. What do you want folks to take home with them? What gift are you giving them?
Sure. So you know, as the federal cyber environment is getting more and more complex and heavier as a result of the more and more compliance regimes that apply, I would say go to the experts. You know, we are here. Electrosoft is here to help. We can bring over 2 decades of successful performance as well as our thought leadership activities to the table to help an organization secure their footprint and be compliant.
And this is what you do, right? This is your bread and butter.
So this is what we live and breathe. You know?
Yeah, exactly. So other folks don't have to. That's the nice thing is, so other folks don't have to. They can trust the experts is what we're learning over and over again. That is Electrosoft President Sabari Gupta and Kumal Kaur, so Electrosoft's senior engineer. Thanks to both of you. And thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. If you want more information about anything that you've heard, you can visit Electrosoft's website at electrosoft-inc.com. And, oh, by the way, mark your calendar, June 25th, Electrosoft, along with ITPA, the Independent Telecommunications Pioneer Association, ITPA, they're hosting the Cybersecurity Transformation Summit 2020, as I mentioned, Thursday, June 25th. There's a number of speakers at the event, but the headliner is Christopher Krebs. He's director of the Department of Homeland Security Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Big name, you'll want to hear from him. And in fact, there's a second webinar later on in the summer. It will be held on July 16th. So mark dates June 25th and then on July 16th. You can find more information about Electrosoft and the Cybersecurity Summit. You can find it at electrosoft-inc.com. With that, thank you for being here. Go out, have a good day. I'm Christopher Dorbeck.